ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut, it's Supercuts.
There are outbreaks affecting all of the major sports leagues.
Yep.
Jalen, what do you think is going to happen next?
I think we should still stay safe, but it's clearly going to have an effect on who wins it all or not.
Yeah.
That's our own Jalen and Jacoby doing what so many of us are doing with our friends right now. Talking about how COVID is, once again, changing everything. So today, with the Omicron variant ripping through America and pro sports scrambling to adjust, we consult two experts, ESPN's Stephania Bell and Harvard University's Dr. Joseph Allen, who explain how leagues are changing in response to these outbreaks and what that means for the rest of us. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, December 20th. This is ESPN Daily. So, Stephania Bell, I don't know if you remember this, but when we first called you up to talk COVID protocols, it was August of 2020. The NBA was in its bubble. The NFL was ironing out its first COVID protocols ever. You were surrounded by enormous binders of printed out COVID rules and regulations. So, how is it all looking where you are right now on a Sunday afternoon, 16 months later?
Well, I'm surrounded by a bunch of moving boxes now. And within those moving boxes are the first stage of the binders. And now I actually have to create new binders for everything that's happened since we last talked about all this.
Yes, it is chaos in your home. It is structural change in your home, all of which these leagues can relate to, Stephania. Because how would you characterize even the situation in sports and COVID right now?
I've got one word that comes to mind, and it's fluid. Nothing is set in stone right now. Everything is this amorphous shape. And then NFL, to be fair, before the season started, they reinforced, like, everyone needs to remain nimble. I think that was the word that they used. You know, they were going to evolve with the science. And that meant that the protocols issued before the start of the season were subject to change. And I think fluid is really the term that I think most aptly describes this week, as we've seen multiple changes just within the week.
Yeah, let's start here with the NFL, because at least 110 players, as of right now, of course, all of it fluid, as you say, 110 guys, Stephania, are out due to COVID protocols. Three games have already been moved to Monday and Tuesday. We're talking about the Raiders at the Browns, 5 p.m. Eastern Monday now, Washington football team at the Philadelphia Eagles, 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, simultaneous to Seahawks at Rams, also 7 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. All of it unusual, all of it chaotic. What had the NFL been doing before this week, though, as its protocols were concerned?
So there were really a couple different paths, depending on whether it was an unvaccinated player who tested positive or a vaccinated player who tested positive. So the vaccinated players, which make up the majority, were required to return two negative PCR tests on consecutive days, 24 hours apart, and be completely asymptomatic to be eligible to return. For the unvaccinated players, they went into a 10-day window of quarantine before they were eligible to return. And then, of course, at the end of the 10 days, that also presumed asymptomatic and fit to return to action. But the difference in the window was that it was not predetermined for the vaccinated players.
Mm. And how had all that been working before Omicron, before the outbreaks that are taking over America?
I think most would say that it was working pretty well. You know, we heard of a case here and there. We heard of, a couple of positive tests. But yes, other than a couple of those outliers, I think most would have said they thought it was working pretty well. And in fact, I think people just got comfortable in living with the protocols as they were. Vaccinated players at that time were tested once a week, typically on Mondays after the weekend. And unvaccinated players were tested daily. And as you are aware, all of the coaching staff. You know, the NFL has these three tiers, tier one, tier two, and tier three. Tier one and two are the only ones with direct engagement with the players. But you think of the medical staff and coaching, et cetera. They were also subjected to the same protocols. All those folks were mandated to be vaccinated prior to the start of the season.
But now, Stefania, I mean, given that we are in this period of total, seemingly hour-to-hour, minute-to-minute change, were the teams prepared? Were they well-resourced for the wave that's hitting them now? Because I remember talking to Josh McCown, for instance, who was on retainer as an emergency quarterback. This was back in 2020, and teams were preparing for that. But were they ready for what's happening here to them today?
I would say not. Not with the sheer numbers that they saw. And that's why this has resulted in games being shifted around, because of the absence of so many players and a bit of a feeling of chaos in terms of who's going to be eligible and when, and what does the testing show. And even intermingled within there, as we know, there can be the occasional false positive. That was a case with one of the Rams players who was not able to play this past Monday night, Tyler Higbee, their tight end, and then had been sent home. It turned out to be a false positive. So then he's back. But by the end of the week, he's back on the reserve COVID-19 list because he did, in fact, test positive. And now his status is in question for their game, which was moved to Tuesday. So just in describing that, you get a sense of what that chaos is, and also the roster depth. So let me give you another example. Miami Dolphins had essentially all of their running backs on the reserve COVID-19 list. Now, prior to today, two of those running backs came off the reserve COVID-19 list, were able to be activated. But when you're looking at depth, I mean, they had brought in Duke Johnson. He's playing today. You know, they had to go out and get players. Some of these teams, the Washington football team, another team who had their game moved, had to go procure another quarterback because they had quarterbacks who had tested positive for COVID-19. So I think the depth within the roster, you know, the flexibility was there for them. The NFL had said they were going to continue to allow the roster flexibility they introduced last year. For those who might not be familiar, they created a special reserve COVID-19 list where players could go on that list if they tested positive for COVID-19 and then be activated once they tested out. And they would not have a limit for players in terms of moving up and down off that list like you would with a typical IR. So I think they thought that could accommodate their needs, but then the numbers just sort of overwhelmed everyone.
Yeah, so the numbers are definitely overwhelming, and it seems like there is pretty fascinating change in terms of what the NFL is doing as regards to testing as a result of all of these numbers and all of these positive cases. Because we know that the rules, the protocols were designed, Stefania, at the start of the season, we covered this on the show, to incentivize vaccination in particular. You'd hold players responsible by withholding pay, threatening other punishments, other inconveniences, if they missed games because they weren't vaccinated. But now with Omicron, clearly, there are many vaccinated and boosted players testing positive. So how is the league adapting to what is a new reality?
Well, there are several things. Number one, the NFL has maintained since last year when they introduced it that if a club had what was considered to be an outbreak, and they do genomic sequencing so they can basically create it's like a breadcrumb trail to go back and see how many people might have been exposed at the same time, et cetera, that if there was an outbreak, they would institute what they called their enhanced protocols. In other words, rules were relaxed for everyone who was vaccinated. They could be unmasked within the building. They could have meetings. They could even dine together. Those things, when you go into the enhanced protocol, all go away. Everyone has to be masked within the building. The meals have to be taken individually. It's like a grab and go situation. You're not dining together. Meetings go on virtually. And so there's really that limited contact. And so the clubs who had the largest outbreaks recently went into these enhanced protocols. But the other thing they started to look at was, Well, how do we return players? Because sometimes players will continue to test positive even once they're asymptomatic and could potentially play. And it has to do with a still shedding virus, even if you're potentially past the stage where you're contagious. And so they started looking at how can we modify the testing for return so that you could essentially test out of quarantine sooner. And that's one of the most recent implementations they've made, is modified that. So potentially, whereas before it was two tests, consecutive days, at least 24 hours apart, now there is a pathway to return within 24 hours of being diagnosed with a positive test.
So that's what happens if you have a positive test. But if you are now just an NFL player who is vaccinated and is asymptomatic, what are they expecting you to do as testing is concerned going forward now?
So now they've essentially removed the testing for vaccinated players and asymptomatic players. The testing protocol, and this is hot off the presses. These rules just changed. They just evolved this weekend. And so now there's basically no testing for asymptomatic vaccinated players. So the people who will get tested are symptomatic individuals, and they've reportedly have some enhanced screening measures. I think they're just going to be very vigilant. If you have any symptoms that would at all be potentially consistent with COVID, you will then get tested. If you are unvaccinated, you will continue to test daily. That is still in place. And then there will be spot testing. It's sort of a random testing assignment, probably by position group. So, for example, a running back group, which might include players and coaches. And these would be the vaccinated asymptomatics, but the random testing is done to potentially capture if there's a suspected exposure or what have you. So just to recap on who is still getting tested in the NFL for COVID, it would be any player who is symptomatic, vaccinated or unvaccinated. Number two, unvaccinated players will get tested daily, except for those players who have recently had COVID, who have recently tested positive, because once you test positive for COVID as an unvaccinated player, you are then exempt from testing for 90 days thereafter.
Yeah, we're dealing again with a player pool, Stefania, at last check of 95% vaccinated individuals among the players. And I'm curious on the labor side of this, because all of this, of course, has to be bargained and negotiated between the union and the league. How fraught was that conversation to move away from that testing regimen to a world where asymptomatic vaccinated players are actually not subject to that testing anymore in general?
It's an interesting question, and I can't tell you quantitatively how the discussion broke down, but I can tell you there's sort of two philosophies. One is there were some players who just really thought, let's do away with it all. Like, we know this is here. We know it's in our presence. Like, just get rid of all, get rid of the testing, get rid of the quarantine, et cetera. But that would seem to be a bit, and I, you know, full disclosure, I'm a physical therapist. I mean, there is some science there. You'd like to think that if this was all built on trying to follow the science, maybe you don't throw it all away. If the other philosophy is, if you really, what you're interested in is preventing transmission, and also understanding that this is a largely healthy, fit population that in many cases maybe is asymptomatic positives. And that's what they were finding, and that influenced this discussion.
Yeah, wait, on the asymptomatic positives, Stefania, what's your sense of how many of these cases of positive tests are asymptomatic and therefore presumably relatively mild?
I think recently quite a few. In fact, Dr. Sills, the medical director of the NFL, was speaking to the media, addressing them on the latest COVID-19 updates at the owners' meeting on December 15th. And he acknowledged that a large percentage of these players were presenting with either no symptoms or very mild symptoms. And to quote him, he said, in fact, just looking at our data for the last 2 days, 2/3 of people have no symptoms at all that have been diagnosed. So of the players who've tested positive, Pablo, 2/3 of them have basically been symptom-free.
And about that new path, the accelerated path back onto the field, Stefania, I know it has to do with viral load, meaning the amount of virus that you still have in your body, as opposed to just whether or not you've tested positive or negative, right?
Right. And so there's three options in order for a player to test out of quarantine. And without getting into the weeds on the details of that, essentially, they're looking at, do you return at least one negative test? And do you have a threshold that you've met in terms of that viral load?
Right, because it's all now about whether you have a certain amount of the virus as opposed to whether you have any amount at all, which is what a positive or negative test would ostensibly give you. But Stefania, after the break, I have questions, many questions, about the different ways the NBA and the NHL are approaching this same problem.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Stefania, it occurs to me that as the NFL is looking to reduce testing, at least for people with antibodies, with vaccination cards that are real, the NHL is dealing with this in a very conspicuously different way. What is their decision on how to adjust their protocols?
Well, as of right now, Pablo, the NHL still has daily testing for everyone. So vaccinated players, unvaccinated players alike, and the NHL reports roughly a 97% vaccination rate. And my understanding is that on game days, they test twice, once in the morning and again before taking the ice for a game.
And I know in the system, Stefania, that if a player who tested positive does not have symptoms and tests negative 24 hours apart, they can return to the ice. But more testing in general here, obviously that is very different from the NFL approach we just discussed. So what's hockey's logic there?
So this is where it gets difficult to explain because, you know, it's different folks having conversations around the same topics that don't have exact precise answers. You know, I think that they feel this is what is best for them and their players and their league. You know, one thing that the NHL contends with that's different than what the NFL contends with is having teams in Canada, multiple teams that they deal with. So there are travel requirements in and out of the country. It is just a slightly different world and the demands are different for them. I am told that the players are actually really still in favor of routine testing. This is important to them. And that feels different to me than where the NFL is right now. So,
again,
you're trying to get your arms around this when there are nuances and things that we can't fully understand from a distance that factor into how these decisions are made.
And so as the NHL is postponing, by the way, 29 games so far at this point, as we record right now, involving 22 teams, I want to get to what the NBA is doing, because the NBA, by no means, Stefania, has been spared by this. When you look at the reschedulings we're talking about today, again, hot off the presses, the Cavs, the Magic, and the Sixers are all having their next games postponed. And the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, that's its own episode unto itself, to be honest with you. They've had their next two games postponed, and they are dealing with, at last check, 10 players, one of whom, of course, is Kyrie Irving, who is on the testing positive list. So how is the NBA at large handling this outbreak as you see it?
Well, they're in a situation where, you know, they have to have eight players active to play. So it becomes a numbers game of in terms of can you field a roster to actually have a game? You know, when we're talking about the NFL, you're talking about a 53-man roster where you have movement up and down. It's a lot harder on a small roster like you have with the NBA. And so I think it makes it more obvious when they have to delay or defer a game.
Yeah, I mean, Stefani, I will quote Austin Rivers from his Instagram live session from today. Quote, "You should have seen the Nets team that we were playing tonight. Patty Mills, Blake Griffin, Cam Thomas were the only ones we knew." End quote. And so there is a quality of product concern amid all of this, right? On top of the health and safety stuff.
Right, of course. And I think even as it's hard because you're in the thick of something, but you also have to step back and look at what are we really doing here? And would it be wiser to have an interruption, even if it's just pausing a game or two, as opposed to just going down this pathway? And I think one thing that's fairly consistent across the leagues, even though they operate differently, is when there is a sense that there is an outbreak, then something needs to happen that's different. So the NBA, for example, goes into enhanced protocols similar to what we talked about with the NFL when there is an outbreak and they go into a higher level of testing when that outbreak is in place. Because the NBA basically has been doing what the NFL is just now starting to do since the start of the season with just going with symptomatic testing. That's how they started the season. So they did once a week testing for 2 weeks when they got into training camp. And then they just said, you know, if you're unvaccinated, you get daily testing. But if you're vaccinated, we're only going to test you if you're symptomatic. So they've been actually conducting that real life experiment since their season started.
Right. And Stefania, this part is pretty fascinating because the NBA had been modeling the more lenient testing policy, as you say, for asymptomatic vaccinated players that the NFL is now implementing. But after Thanksgiving, the NBA started testing everyone in anticipation of all of this madness, I suppose, testing everybody regardless of vaccination status, more like what the NHL is doing. And since the NBA flipped on that, all of these stars, James Harden, Kevin Durant, Giannis, Trae Young now, on and on and on, they started testing positive and getting sidelined. And I'm curious if you think there's a chance that the NBA actually reverts back to their previous policy.
You know, I think right now they're always all my sources in every league will tell you again, fluid is the name of the game. So they're never comfortable might not be a word that they would be comfortable using, because I think as long as this is present, they're reevaluating on a daily basis. Are we doing enough? Are we doing what is best in the best interest of the health and safety of the players and staff and their families? Are we doing what's best for the business of the sport? So those variables are all intertwined, and they're obviously evaluating them on a regular basis. I think the presence of the Omicron variant, my source with the NBA said, look, this what we're seeing now, we're catching a lot of asymptomatic positives. You know, sound familiar? We were talking about that with football. And so I think there is a bit of a sense of understanding that there may be a medium where you learn to live in the presence of the virus, which honestly may reflect the community at large. And at what point does it become something where you have to take additional action? Well, when you're having high transmission, when you have an outbreak, then you need to scale back. But for those, again, vaccinated and boosted, seems to be that less symptoms, clearing faster. I'm also hearing that from my NBA source that the players seem to be clearing through this latest version faster. And again, a reminder that most of these athletes don't have the associated comorbidities that would make for more severe cases. They are young, they are fit, they are healthy. So it is a certain subpopulation that's not necessarily reflective of the population at large.
Yes, the NBA population at last check, 97% vaccinated, with the next phase of this involving the booster and involving also potential proposed rules about signing replacement players if your team has been decimated by the virus in order to avoid having a postponement at all. But Stefania, as we look ahead now to the next phase, big picture, What does this all look like to you? Because I also think of like college basketball. They just canceled the Tennessee-Memphis game on Saturday, pulling players and fans out of the building before tip-off. It obviously seems to be quite unpredictable. So at the risk of making ourselves look foolish, where do things go from here as the week begins?
Well, I think anyone who tells you they know how it will go is going to look foolish by default. What we've learned is that we never fully know the twists and turns this virus will take. We've seen over the last year, we've learned that it can mutate, and it's one step ahead of us, essentially, but that those mutations will take on different characteristics. And what we've been discussing with the Omicron variant, like we said, you know, easily transmissible, perhaps more contagious, but perhaps less virulent and easier to clear. So those twists and turns will influence how decisions are made going forward about protocols, about testing. I will tell you that some people will say, you know, over-testing can be burdensome and costly. And is it, what is it doing for us in the scope of what we're really trying to do, which is reduce transmission and keep players healthy? So those conversations will continue in each of the various leagues, and they will probably not all mirror each other exactly, but I do know they communicate. You know, it was interesting. I was at a sports medicine conference this summer and had medical directors from multiple leagues present in sort of a panel discussion. And the one thing that became clear was they all felt like they've communicated more with each other since COVID arrived than they ever had before. And it was like, oh, hey, look at these smart people over here who are affiliated with the NBA. And look at these smart people over here affiliated with the NFL. And maybe if you have a best practice that we can learn from, we can implement that or some format of that in our league. And I think if you're looking for a silver lining in all this, maybe that communication is one of the things that helps continue to move these leagues forward and allow them to still continue to produce the content, which is sports for the sports fans, and keep the players playing even in the presence of this virus, which doesn't appear to be going anywhere.
No. And Stefan Ubell, thank you, by the way, for communicating with us as you're surrounded by boxes and binders, because I know none of this is easy.
Thanks, Pablo. Believe me, the learning is ongoing for all of us.
And for me, because coming up, we have public health expert Dr. Joseph Allen, who tells us what these newly adjusted protocols suggest for the future of American life.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So as we grapple with this question of what sports are doing, I also want to make sure we touch on the question of what sports really should be doing. And I welcome in Dr. Joseph Allen for that. Joe, you're the head of the Healthy Buildings Program at the Harvard School of Public Health, where you're an associate professor. You're the chair of the Lancet COVID-19 Commission Task Force on Safe Work, Safe School, and Safe Travel. You're the co-author of this excellent book titled Healthy Buildings. So thank you for joining me here at 11 a.m. Eastern on Sunday.
Yeah, it's great to be here, and nice to get that credentialing out of the way. I'm also a coach to my 9-year-old basketball team, so that's most important.
Well, all of this converges on us today, Joe, because right now, the biggest story in sports clearly is COVID again. And there is this question that I think a lot of people are asking themselves, especially where I live in New York City, which is broad. It's, are we back in March 2020? And I'm just curious, as somebody who's tracked this thing since February of 2020, if it feels at all that way to you.
You know, it does and it doesn't. I'd say it does in the sense that it feels uncertain to a lot of people. But we should be really clear. This is nothing like March 2020. We know a lot more about this virus. We know exactly how it spread. So because of the rise of Omicron doesn't mean that changes. The basic physics still apply. And of course, most importantly, we have safe and effective vaccines. So our toolkit has expanded. We know how to treat people who get infected better. But, you know, so for a lot of people, it feels concerning because clearly cases are rising with Omicron. And we're just at the beginning of this wave in the U.S. So the next couple of weeks are going to be rough in terms of case counts going up. But really, if you're vaccinated and boosted, you're going to fare, most people are going to fare just fine.
I'm curious, Joe, because there is this point that has been made over and over again. Well, look, if the vaccine is not going to prevent transmissibility of COVID at this point, as we see in sports specifically, which have in general like a super, super high rate of vaccination, over 90% in the major leagues, in the big sports, then what do you say to that concern?
I think we got comfortable with the vaccine against the origin strain and that it looked like it was stopping any infection. But that's not really what the vaccines are designed to do, right? We take the vaccines to avoid the worst of the worst. And we happen to get lucky early on that it looked like they really stopped transmission and really prevented people from getting it at all. That has changed with Delta, and it has certainly changed with Omicron, where the vaccines are still excellent at doing what they're designed to do. They're going to keep you out of the hospital. But more breakthroughs are happening. Now, if you get a booster, it'll push that up protection against any infection, but still we're going to see breakthroughs with boosters. So the vaccines are performing kind of exactly like we had hoped. I think they were so good a year ago that we got to thinking, well, that's how they should always work. They should stop any infection. But they're working exactly as designed, and it's a good thing, right? That we should feel confident and comfortable that the vaccines are taking the sting out of this virus and turning what could have been a hospitalization or even a death into a common cold.
Is it also fair to say that they are somewhat effective still against transmissibility? Do we have data and information on just the idea of spreading this thing?
Well, I think in a couple of ways they are. First, you can't spread it if you don't have it. And even though we have breakthroughs, if you're vaccinated, you're less likely to get it than someone who's unvaccinated. If you're boosted, you're even less likely to get it. So that's important, right? You can't spread it if you don't have it. Second, if you have a breakthrough case and you're vaccinated and boosted, the duration of your symptoms and period of infectivity is also shorter. So that contributes to reducing the amount of spread.
Yeah. So in terms of the definition of what it means to be vaccinated right now, Joe, does the booster seem required to you at this point in terms of what it means to actually be vaccinated in December of 2021?
I think it's clear that fully vaccinated right now means a booster shot. The data have been consistent and clear through the fall, but everything we're seeing shows that the booster re-ups protection against any infection and also enhances protection against these severe outcomes, hospitalizations and deaths.
Yeah, so the idea of the new normal, Joe, I'm very curious how that applies to testing now, because the big question in sports right now seems to be, do you eliminate regular testing of asymptomatic vaccinated athletes? But I'm curious what that proposal sounds like to you.
I think they have it right. And I understand why it might sound like it's not right to a lot of people, because it's different from what we've been told for the past 2 years. But there's a new threat out there. We have new tools. So the playbook should be different. If we're going around testing people who are vaccinated, and boosted, we're going to find what the NFL has been finding. We're going to find a lot of these cases. Most are asymptomatic. And so it's a lot less relevant compared to before we had vaccines. I also think it's really important to understand what the goal of testing is, right? So the NFL was testing weekly. That's really good for surveillance. You want to know how well your controls are working. You get an estimate of how many cases you have. But testing as a control strategy needs to be more frequent, especially with Omicron, because the viral kinetics, meaning how fast this virus replicates in our bodies, is such that you could be negative on Monday and be infectious on Tuesday. And so cases, I believe, are no longer the right metric. I think they were early on. We were managing around cases. I think you're going to see a shift in 2022. We've been talking about it for a couple of months now, but I think The public's going to be ready for this. And I think the federal government is going to start announcing this too, the Biden administration, that we shouldn't be relying on cases only as the metric. And again, I don't think the NFL, by pulling back on testing, is diminishing their control strategy. The weekly test wasn't a control strategy. It was a surveillance strategy. Omicron's not going away. Delta's not going away. So we have to think about what those trade-offs are. The other part here is that there are the tools available for everyone to protect themselves. Absolutely, first and foremost, get vaccinated. Get your kids vaccinated. If it's been 6 months, get boosted. If you've had the J&J shot, get boosted right away. On top of that, if that doesn't feel safe enough for you, the protection against hospitalizations and death, you can always wear a high-grade mask and further your protections, your individual protections. And in that case, wearing an N95 or a KF94 mask will provide you with an additional excellent layer of protection. So we have the tools for everyone to meet their kind of level of acceptable risk, so to speak. And risk is very subjective. So the uncertainty is real. The anxiety is real. But the good thing is it's not March 2020. We have the tools at our disposal.
I'm curious where vaccine mandates fit into that vision for you, Joe, because clearly you want sports and the business of sports and the games to keep going. But if vaccination is so core to all of this, should that entail a mandate?
Yeah, I think it requires a mandate. But let me address that other comment, though. You know, I'm a public health professor, so I'm not just about the sports and the game and the business. I think there are real costs when the economy closes down. You know, millions of jobs are at stake here. We're just getting these things restarted. And it's not just sports. Broadway needs to figure out a way to get going. And I don't just mean Broadway. I mean touring Broadway. I mean local theaters. They were just starting to recover. They were hit hard for a year and a half. Restaurants. All of these are jobs and people and their livelihoods. And all of that influences health. So this is not just a money issue, right? How do we keep the NFL in business to make more money for the owners? Not from my perspective at all. It's a bigger public health issue. Second, I do think vaccine mandates are critical. I mean, it's clear the path out of this pandemic, right? It's the vaccines and the boosters. We get vaccinated all the time throughout our entire life for all sorts of things. This is really important to not only individual health, but the health of the economy, the health of businesses, and also the health of the country. So it's quite frustrating to me that we haven't pushed harder on the vaccine mandate. I mean, had that been approved earlier this fall, the benefit of the vaccine mandate would be hitting right now, right when we needed it most. And it really hurt us. At some point, the country's got to get a handle on what our goals are. And it's been a slow conversation through the fall, and that's speeding up. I think people are realizing, wait a second, what are our goals? And what does that mean as we get through Omicron and get into 2022?
So another big part of your research has been about ventilation and air circulation in buildings. That's the whole Healthy Buildings program. Where does sports rate for you on that, Joe?
Yeah, I think we have to start with the basics. You know, the virus is spread through the air, and that means ventilation is important. And it also means that outdoors is very low risk. In fact, we see very little, if any, transmission outdoors. So I think we're overestimating the risk, even for sports, even close contact sports. I also think, relatedly, we're overestimating risk in large volume places, even like arenas. You have very high ceilings. You have a lot of room for dilution. We haven't seen these as super spreading events. So here's where I'm more concerned, right? Clearly spread is happening. Where is it happening? Well, some of it's happening away from the field, away from the game. But I'd be more concerned with low ventilation rates in things like the locker room, the meeting rooms, the gym, the trainer's office, right? These areas, I don't know what the sports leagues have done, but if they haven't enhanced their ventilation and filtration in those places, I guarantee that's where the transmission is happening, much more so than worrying about people out on the field. And that's where transmission is happening when it's outdoors or in these, you know, gigantic arenas, right? You have a lot of young, healthy athletes vaccinated, but you have oftentimes, if not always, an older coaching staff, older, medical staff, just general staff at the arena. So that's really important. I think we should just drive home the fact that vaccine should be mandated for everyone in the game, everyone affiliated with the game, because it's not so much the transmission or these, asymptomatic cases. We're just trying to prevent the severe outcomes. And so that's the way to do it.
So let's talk masks, Joe, because where do masks fit into the new normal in 2022 to you, assuming that we're dealing with people who are, again, vaccinated and boosted?
Well, I want to be clear that masks work. I've been a proponent of them for a long time. I just think, as we think about the new playbook, that the importance of masks changes if you're vaccinated and boosted. And in fact, it's one of the things that we can start pulling back from if you're in an area or around other people who are fully vaccinated and boosted, much like you'd have with sports. So, and I also think anyone who wants to continue to wear one should absolutely be able to, unobstructed, no harassment, right? You want to wear a mask, that's great. You can provide that extra layer of protection. But I don't think, this idea that we're going to wear masks even periodically in public places is going to tamp down the spread of Omicron.
So is that true for fans as well, Joe, who go to these games? I'm curious what the playbook for customers might be, again, assuming that they have been boosted as well.
I don't think we're going to move away from requiring masks. I think there's going to be a lot of pressure to keep masks on in these public spaces. I think it's right if you're mixing with people of unknown vaccination status that it makes sense for everyone to wear a mask because you can't police it otherwise. That said, I think we're really overestimating risk in some of these places. Right now, you could be exposed to someone right next to you at a game, but it's not like you're going to have spread across the stadium. Right, like we've seen in, like a small restaurant where one person can infect 80% of the people in the restaurant. Small volume, the aerosols build up, these respiratory aerosols from someone who's infectious, they're emitted, they build up in a room like cigarette smoke. Right, that's a good way to think about these respiratory aerosols, like cigarette smoke. So imagine someone smoking a cigarette in an arena, that's their respiratory aerosols being emitted. Maybe the person right next to them who they've been with all day is going to get a big whiff of this. Even a row over may not even know they're smoking a cigarette. And certainly someone on the other side of the stadium has no idea, is not going to be impacted. So for now, through this Omicron wave we're about to hit, I think we're going to see a lot of places stick with the masking mandates in areas where it's not fully everyone vaccinated.
And what about capacity of these arenas, Joe? Would you change the number of people allowed in the building at any given time?
So I think reducing the capacity is a bit performative, right? It might look good to people, but again, I think we're overestimating that risk of being outdoors or being in these big arenas. So creating another space or, a seat or two between people or groups, I don't think is going to lead to much public health benefit at all, to be honest. So all that to say is that if someone feels uncomfortable because they think capacity is too high, or they're going to be jammed next to somebody at a seat next to them at the NBA. They don't know if they're vaccinated or not. If they wear a really good mask and they're vaccinated and boosted, that's a low risk situation.
So early in our conversation, Joe, you had mentioned that cases no longer should be the metric for how we think and quantify the public conversation around the virus. What should we replace that with in 2022?
Well, I think we're going to have to replace that with a focus on hospitalizations and deaths, the things that we're really trying to avoid, and actually what the vaccines are designed to stop. I think CDC is behind on that. And I think the sports leagues are ahead on that. And they're starting to manage away from cases. And that's what's driving this this pullback on testing people who are vaccinated. We're finding things where they're asymptomatic. That's not meaning as much as a positive test 2 years ago.
So are you working and living under the assumption that all of us are probably going to be a COVID case at some point then?
Yes. I mean, to be totally straightforward, the answer is yes. And the question is just when, right? Think about the other circulating common cold coronaviruses. We're all exposed to them when we're kids. They circulate. And so I don't think it's realistic to think anyone's going to avoid this thing.
So at the end here, Joe, given this reality, and I appreciate the bluntness with which you described it, what is the role of sports to you here as a place that society very often looks to for examples, for reasons to argue amongst themselves, as a place that has set the tone previously, as recently as last year, in terms of public health best practices?
Well, I think people look into sports for a lot of reasons. One, it provides a great relief from what has just been a really trying 2 years. What was better than seeing the sports leagues come back and to have that quite honest distraction, something to talk about, something to watch other than COVID. I also think we're looking to them because they have resources that we don't have elsewhere in society. And so we're leveraging their knowledge, and we've learned a lot from them. In fact, we learned probably what got the country awake in March 2020 was when the games started to be canceled, right? I think that was a wake-up call for the country. I think this is a similar wake-up call the other way, that the leagues are going to lead and show us how to do this safely. And by this, I mean how to coexist and continue to do the things we love as this virus circulates and we tamp down or aim to tamp down the worst of the worst, the ravages of this virus. And so it's a leadership moment. And I think just like March 2020, the leagues led, and I think they're leading us right now.
Dr. Joseph Allen, thank you for leading our conversation on ESPN Daily.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.